Hello, I'm Christy Walters for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. This edition's cover story, The Battle for Beds. North Carolina hospitals compete for expansion in the face of swelling occupancy rates. North Carolina is heading toward a healthcare crisis. For decades prior to the COVID pandemic, the average nationwide hospital occupancy in the U.S. was around 64%. This rate, which reflects the average daily hospital census divided by the number of beds, increased during the pandemic, but has not come back down, said Dr. Richard Luchter, a physician and researcher at UCLA. We kind of chalked that up to COVID for several years, but then I remember one day, after the public health emergency was declared to have ended, I looked around and my list was just as full as it had ever been, Luchter said. Early last year, North Carolina had a hospital occupancy rate of about 80%, one of the highest in the country. If unaddressed, the problem could reach dangerous levels over the next few years. Luchter's research project's national hospital occupancy could reach 85%, a rate associated with a bed shortage, as soon as 2032. That's when we start to see that hospitals have a lot of operational issues, Luchter said. When you have these relative shortages, there are people boarding for a long time in the ED. You start to miss medications, you miss diagnoses, you give the wrong medications. Each year, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services publishes a state medical facilities plan, projecting needs for various facilities and services. The North Carolina State Health Coordinating Council oversees the development of this plan, which involves various committee meetings and public hearings before it is handed to the governor for approval. The 2025 State Medical Facilities Plan identified a need for 1,011 additional hospital beds in North Carolina, with Wake County receiving the largest share at 267 beds. This is a significant increase over recent years, following the previous high marks of 423 and 388 beds in 2023 and 2024, respectively. The sharp increase is due to a change in how these numbers are developed. The State Health Coordinating Council temporarily changed the methodology during the COVID-19 pandemic. Before the 2025 plan, the council reverted to its pre-pandemic methodology, leading to this large increase. And next year's plan could call for an even bigger increase. A draft document presented during a meeting in May outlined the need of more than 2,500 hospital beds throughout the state. This document, with the rest of the 2026 plan, is still being revised and will not be finalized until signed by the governor later this year. This influx of available beds creates more opportunities for North Carolina health systems as they look to expand into other markets. It could also entice out-of-state providers to make a move in Triangle. There are impediments to a new provider coming in, but the Triangle market is so desirable that I believe you will have more in-state and out-of-state providers applying for hospital beds in the future, said Noah Huffstetler, an attorney at Nelson Mullins, who focuses on healthcare. Huffstetler, who works with health systems navigating the state's certificate of need process, has previously heard from outside health systems interested in the Triangle. The region is an attractive market for health systems because of its combination of a growing population and a lucrative payer mix. This includes a high number of people who are privately insured and fewer who people receive care through Medicaid and Medicare, which generally pay at lower rates than private insurance. Previously, these outside health systems experienced challenges with the state's Certificate of Need law. This law regulates how health systems apply for and receive licenses to build hospitals and other services according to the state medical facilities plan. Because North Carolina has one of the most restrictive Certificate of Need laws in the country, the process can lead to lengthy delays and costly appeals. These out-of-state groups have also been deterred by the Triangle's strong existing providers, but that could soon change. We have gotten contacts from people outside the state in years past who were interested in moving into the Triangle area, Hefstetler said. So I would be very surprised if that wasn't the case this time with all these beds available. Last year's competition for hospital beds in Wake County could portend how the battle for hospital beds could play out. Novant Health has major operations throughout most of North Carolina, except for the Triangle, where it has a few physicians' offices. However, last year, the health system tried to make a big play in the area, filing an application for a 36-bed hospital in Knightdale that was projected to cost around $287 million. State regulators denied this proposal and instead split the 70 beds identified for Wake County in the 2024 State Medical Facilities Plan between expansion proposals from Duke Health, UNC Health, and Wake Med. Those projects, approved in January, remaining pending on appeal. We saw that interest in the 2024 review, so with this year's need determination of 267 beds in Wake County, it's certainly reasonable to expect another hyper-competitive review, said Karen Sandlin, president of healthcare advisory firm Clarity Strategic Services. In some parts of the state, these out-of-market expansion efforts are already underway. Duke Health, before this year, operated primarily in the Triangle. But in April, the health system closed its $284 million purchase of Lake Norman Regional Medical Center, now Duke Health Lake Norman Hospital, in Mooresville. For Duke, this acquisition was a matter of right place, right time, as the health was looking for ways to expand beyond the Triangle, CEO Dr. Craig Albanese told Triangle Business Journal the day the deal closed. There's been a lot of shifts in the healthcare landscape, and it just so turns out that now the timing is right for us, Albanese said. We're proud to be able to serve more communities in different ways, and this is just one example of that. A few weeks later, Duke, in partnership with Novant, filed an application to develop a 46-bed hospital in Alamance County in a project expected to cost $225 million. The proposal brings together two different types of organizations, with Novant's experience operating community hospitals and Duke's focus on academic medicine. The health systems historically have not competed in the same markets, although Duke's recent acquisition of the Lake Norman Hospital now puts the health system fewer than 30 miles away from Charlotte, where Novant has a major presence. But this overall lack of overlapping market competition likely made it more attractive for the health systems to work together, said Mark Pascaris, an analyst with Fitch Ratings, who focuses on nonprofit health systems. These types of partnerships also make sense in an industry that, in good times, operates on tight margins in the range of 3 to 4%. When you operate a margin that tight in an environment where you're facing pressures around tariffs, research funding cuts, possible Medicaid cuts, every dollar matters, Pascaris said. These tight margins also drive the need for size and scale. Hospitals operate in an industry with high fixed costs, where they are unable to increase rates to a level that keeps pace with rising workforce, medicine, and supply costs. Often the solution is to instead increase volume, and this is easier to do in growing markets like the Triangle, said Don Carter, founder and senior partner of Ascendiant Healthcare Advisors. It's much easier to be a brand new provider in a growing market than to try to come in and establish a new facility in a market that's not growing. As every patient that you try to attract, you're tearing away from somebody else, Carter said. Lechter's firsthand experience seeing more crowded hospitals in his region of Southern California led him to study what was taking place across the U.S. The UCLA physician and researcher looked at hospital occupancy data for every state from May 2023 through April 2024, a time frame that marks the end of the COVID public health emergency through the end of period during which hospitals were required to report weekly occupancy to the federal government. Lechter found that hospital occupancy in the U.S. between May 2023 and April 2024 was around 75%, with North Carolina tracking even higher at around 80%, according to research Lechter published in JAMA Network Open in February. It wouldn't take major events for this rate to increase even further to 85%. Lechter said the simple aging of the country's population could push the national hospital occupancy to this threshold associated with a bed shortage, assuming no other steps were taken to divert the crisis over the next few years. We're having a demographic shift where, for the first time, sometime between 2030 and 2035 in U.S. history, the number of adults who are over 65 will outnumber people under 18, Lechter said. So it stands to reason that some point in there, you're also going to feel the sequelae of that aging population in terms of healthcare utilization. In 2000, about 12% of North Carolina's population was 65 years or older. By 2030, this share of the population is projected to reach 20%, said Jonathan Guarin, an economist with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Older adults require more specialized medical services as they are more likely to suffer from chronic health conditions, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and other conditions. This creates an increased need for healthcare services and workers in the coming years. Between 2022 and 2032, North Carolina's healthcare and social assistance sector is expected to add nearly 102,000 jobs, outpacing every other sector in terms of job creation. More than 40,000 of these jobs will be in hospitals, which have employee bases that are also aging. We have to realize that even for doctors and nurses and our home health aides, they're also aging, and that presents significant challenges for recruitment retention going forward, Guarin said. The looming hospital bed shortage is a complicated situation and one that will not be solved by simply building more hospital beds, Lechter said. Addressing the problem involves curbing the growing healthcare worker shortage while also diverting more people away from hospitals to more suitable places for care, like specialized outpatient clinics. North Carolina hospitals are already experiencing challenges around occupancy, especially in the state's populated metro areas. In the Triangle and the Charlotte region, hospitals are running at higher occupancy rates than the targets that the state set forth, Carter said. The fast-growing populations of counties like Wake and Mecklenburg are contributing to the occupancy challenges. Additionally, as hospitals or certain specialty services disappear in the rural parts of the state, more people are traveling farther distances to seek care at Triangle hospitals, Carter said. This higher occupancy is difficult for both providers and patients. It's harder and harder to manage folks, Carter said. And at a patient level, they don't understand why they're having to wait in the emergency department for 5 hours when they're being told they've got to be admitted and the hospital can't find a bed. To determine how many new hospital beds are needed in specific counties, the North Carolina State Health Coordinating Council considers the number of existing hospital beds or beds under development and the number of days of care at hospitals each year. The process involves calculating the need for a specific year, set 4 years beyond the state medical facility plan's current reporting year. For example, the reporting year for this year's is October 1st, 2022 through September 30th, 2023, with 2027 as the projection year. The State Health Coordinating Council adjusted its calculations for the 2022, 2023, and 2024 plans to account for the impact of COVID-19 on acute care bed utilization, according to a spokesperson for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. This meant that the council was essentially determining hospital bed need based on pre-pandemic growth trends. It was more conservative and a more prudent approach to use these pre-pandemic data because it was uncertain whether to be placing bed needs on these surges in volume due to COVID hospitalizations, Sandlin said. There are broader healthcare trends complicating the situation. For example, over the years, healthcare providers have tried to move certain procedures, such as hip replacements, to more specialized outpatient settings. This means the remaining hospital patients tend to require more complex care and stay for a longer period, placing a greater strain on hospital capacity, especially in growing areas like the Triangle. We're seeing these need determinations because hospitals are full, Sandlin said. We need additional capacity. North Carolina's process of regulating how medical facilities are developed in the state has drawn significant criticism from state lawmakers in recent years. Earlier this year, Benton Sawrey, a Republican from Johnston County, introduced legislation that would completely repeal North Carolina's Certificate of Need law. Language from this legislation, Senate Bill 370, was also included in the Senate's proposed budget bill. About two-thirds of the states in the U.S. have Certificate of Need laws in place, which have been around since the 1970s and are intended to control health care costs by restricting the unnecessary duplication of medical facilities. To Sawrey, the law has outlived its purpose. Sawrey believes hospital administrators should be left to develop their own facilities plans rather than a state agency. They know their communities best. I think they're qualified and appropriately able to make decisions based on the risk of population growth and expected revenues, Sawrey said. They're not going to put themselves in a position where they have bankrupted themselves. Sawrey references how state regulators initially denied an application last year from UNC Health Johnston to add 12 beds to its existing Clayton Hospital, with state regulators raising questions over the patient volume projections included in UNC Health Johnston's application. The health systems responded to the denial by providing additional clarification around its occupancy forecast. The NCDHHS finally approved the project about a month later, resulting in only a short-term delay. It was really hard to understand, considering Johnston County is one of the fastest-growing counties in the state, Sawrey said. While a full repeal may not be likely this year, Sawrey said he is optimistic that conversations around major reform of the state's Certificate of Need law could accelerate over the next few years. For example, there is a case that could eventually lead to the state Supreme Court determining whether the law is unconstitutional. In addition to unsettled future of state legislation, health systems are operating in uncertain economic environments. After seeing margins decline during and after the pandemic, nonprofit hospitals and health systems began this year on a sturdier footing. Fitch Ratings reported in March that the nonprofit healthcare sector saw margins improvement in 2024 as personnel costs declined, with hospitals relying less on contract labor. But that bright picture has become blurry as federal policy changes have created an uncertain operating environment for our hospitals. Our expectation is that slow but steady pace of improvement would continue into 2025, said Pescaris with Fitch Ratings. Now there's a new set of headwinds with the uncertainties around tariffs, what may or may not happen with the NIH and other federal funding cuts. The federal government in March implemented 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from all countries, which could increase the costs of developing new hospitals and facilities. This creates conflicting pressures for health systems in fast-growing areas like the Triangle, which need to develop more facilities to meet patient demand. It gives you this need to deploy more capital spending in an environment where, as of right now, you're going to have elevated capital spending costs, Pescaris said. That doesn't mean the projects won't eventually need to happen, but there's a little bit of a waiting game. Let's head over to this edition's biz section. We've got a few articles this morning, starting out with, this is Dane Huffman's page. Hillsborough Street Hotel to survive as a new brand. A Holiday Inn on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street that was scheduled to be demolished will live on. Title Real Estate Partners of New York bought the property in 2021 and had planned to knock down the circular landmark and put in a Kimpton Hotel. But the Holiday Inn continued to have steady bookings, and the real estate market changed, leading Title to shift gears to make it a Hotel Indigo. We are excited to bring downtown Raleigh the true lifestyle boutique hotel it deserves, and to do so by restoring an iconic Raleigh landmark, said Ken Copeland, president of Title Real Estate Partners. The hotel dates to 1969. Delta to restore flight to Indy that pandemic axed. Delta Airlines is bringing back a route to Indianapolis from Raleigh-Durham International Airport that it suspended in 2020. The route returns August 11th. Frontier Airlines currently connects RDU and Indianapolis. Both markets are key players in the pharmaceutical industry. Eli Lilly and Company is based in Indianapolis and has been expanding in Durham. A Chapel Hill bar remains closed and looks for options. Over a year after closing due to debts accrued during the pandemic, the home of Linda's Bar and Grill in Chapel Hill is still weighing its future. Kim Scott, the daughter of the restaurant's namesake, Linda Williams, is seeking someone who will not just own the space, but reimagine it while staying true to Linda's worn wooden roots. We believe the next chapter of Linda's can be stronger and more resilient with the right leadership, updated business strategy, and continued community support, she said. Scott said she is searching for a candidate with experience in the restaurant industry with a genuine love for the Chapel Hill community. As the original owners and proprietors, she and Williams are eager to see the doors reopen for old and new generations alike. We're ready to support the next chapter, she said. Now we're looking for the right person to write it with us. The location has an assessed value of nearly $1.2 million. Linda's opened in 1976, and Christopher Carini purchased the business, but not the building, in 2011. It closed in January 2024 due to debts from the pandemic. A Fortune 500 list still tilts to Charlotte. The Triangle has plenty of advantages over Charlotte, but the Queen City does have an edge when it comes to Fortune 500 companies. The list, out June 2nd, showed 11 companies in the state in the top 500, with seven of them in Charlotte. The Triangle had just three: IQVIA in Durham, number 282, First Citizens in Raleigh at number 293, and Advance Auto Parts in Raleigh, number 389. Charlotte's Bank of America ranked number 17. A legacy Raleigh spot lives on in Wendell. A legendary Raleigh hamburger spot that had a long run at the old North Hills Mall actually lives on in Wendell. Scotty's Chuck Wagon was on the lower level, which meant a kid could get candy at Woolworth's, browse for toy trains at the hobby shop, and then gobble a burger and fries at Scotty's. Dave Scotty Humphrey opened the store in 1969. He and his partner, Aubrey Edwards, opened a second one at Crabtree Valley Mall. Edwards opened his own place in Zebulon in 1978 and then moved it to Wendell in 1979. His son, Petey, now runs it as Aubrey's and Petey's Grill at 38 North Main Street and keeps the name of his father, who died in 2010. The hamburgers, hot dogs, fries, and chili are all made from the same recipes and even the same supplier as what was found at North Hills before the mall was demolished in 2003. Before the demolition, some of the mall's items were auctioned off, including a neon Scotty's sign that seemed to mark the end of an era, except that it didn't. Petey Edwards said the fare in Wendell is pretty much the same as what was offered at Scotty's. The only difference, he said, is that the restaurant now offers a breakfast plate, whereas Scotty's only had breakfast sandwiches. Edwards says he has five employees and business is great. It helps that Wendell is thriving and the population is exploding. We are seeing a lot of different faces every day, he said. What also remains the same from the old days is that Aubrey's and Petey's doesn't take credit cards. We are a cash-only business. We do have an ATM, Edwards said. We are still old school. Let's head over to Lauren Onosorg's page on technology and finance. Wolfspeed promotes Spirits to interim CFO. Wolfspeed has named a new finance chief to manage the semiconductor company's billions worth of debt. Kevin Spirits, senior vice president of finance for the Durham company, began as interim chief financial officer May 30th. He will be tasked with restructuring the company's finances for a price. Spirits has been at the company since 2020. Prior to Wolfspeed, he held roles at other technology firms such as NXP Semiconductor NV and Freescale Semiconductor, both companies also on former Wolfspeed CEO Greg Lowe's resume. Lowe was fired last year. Previous CFO Neil Reynolds left for a position at Ralliant Technologies. Industry veteran Robert Furrell recently became CEO as Wolfspeed works its way through more than $6 billion in debt. In addition to his current salary and bonus, Spirits gets a one-time lump sum payment of $100,000 to be paid June 23rd. Spirits will receive another $100,000 to provide transition services to the permanent CFO. And he'll get another $100,000 to provide necessary support to oversee and complete debt restructuring work on behalf of the company. According to Wolfspeed, the company continues to seek out a permanent CEO. A Raleigh pastor pleads guilty to $400,000 COVID loan. A Raleigh pastor has pleaded guilty to fraudulently obtaining more than $400,000 in COVID-19 loans. Mitchell Summerfield of the Word of God Fellowship Church pleaded guilty recently to charges of conspiracy to commit bank fraud and wire fraud. Prosecutors describe a scheme to fraudulently obtain COVID-19 loan funds, dollars that were supposed to help struggling business owners recover from the pandemic. But in the case of Summerfield, the money went toward personal expenses, from paying off unrelated loans to funding trips. Altogether, Summerfield is accused of bilking more than $402,000 from the government, according to a criminal information filing from January. Clean energy investment could get a significant cut. Some North Carolina companies are hitting pause on clean energy investments as they watch federal developments. Come January 1st, that credit doesn't exist. The demand for those jobs are going to be drastically reduced, said Will Etheridge, CEO of Southern Energy Management. I think it sends a chilling, very confusing message to investors. At issue are a group of tax breaks tied to clean energy dating to the Biden administration that would be repealed under a spending bill that narrowly passed the House of Representatives. Southern Energy Management, a Raleigh company that performs rooftop solar installation, was budgeted for $30 million in business this year. Durham Solar investor Leyline Renewable Capital has halted the funding of new projects, CEO Eric Lynch said. Investors like Leyline do not like uncertainty, Lynch said. A former Brooks Bell firm is acquired. A company once known to be among the best places to work in the Triangle is being acquired. Blazer, a Raleigh tech consulting firm, formerly known as Brooks Bell, is being acquired by Merge, a Chicago marketing and technology agency. Merge CEO Stephanie Trunzo had previously been the chief operating officer of PointSource, a design and development technology agency in Raleigh, when it was acquired by Globant in a deal worth up to $28 million. Trunzo had known Blazer, then called Brooks Bell, and always thought highly of Blazer. Its focus on A-B testing, comparing two versions of a campaign to see which one performs better, that first caught her eye. When founder Brooks Bell made the shift into more high-level consulting, Trunzo kept watching. Her interest only escalated when she stepped into the top spot at Merge. Taking stock of the firm's capabilities, I knew we needed something. It was this ability to sit above those individual marketing and technology offerings and weave together a story for our clients that's a little more driven by what their strategic offerings are that they're trying to get to, Trunzo said. Blazer fit the bill and discussions began. Trunzo said the entire team at just under 20 is coming on board. It gives the Chicago company a solid footprint in Raleigh. One Trunzo, who is also located here, hopes to grow. Financial details were not released. In 2019, following a cancer diagnosis, Bell transitioned from CEO to executive chairman. With the Merge deal, Bell will no longer be involved with the company. She said the sale was bittersweet for me on some level, but said she was really happy for the team. Being a part of Merge is going to open doors for their careers and their personal growth, she said. Heading over to the real estate and development page with Kaylee Thompson's writings. Developer plans townhomes near NC State. A Raleigh property situated between the Beltline and the NC State University campus has sold for nearly $600,000 an acre. A Squared LLC, A.J. Stilitano's development company, bought 3.76 acres near the intersection of Kent Road and Western Boulevard for $2.25 million, according to Wake County deed records. The land is slated for the company's latest project of 51 condo-style townhomes. Priced in the mid to upper 500,000s, Stilitano said the homes will be marketed to young professionals who want to live near downtown. The location is what attracted Stilitano and his team. He cited the increase in development along Western Boulevard, NC State, as an insulator and proximity to the Beltline as reasons for the purchase. A Squared LLC has developed around 350 residential units, student housing, and multifamily in the area over the past 7 years. The company, along with Tenzing Investments LLC, its student housing arm, recently sold student housing rentals off Gorman Street for $10.7 million. The proceeds from that sale went into the company's development pipeline. For the condo-style townhomes on Kent Street, the 2- and 3-story units will be 2,000 square feet with 3 bedrooms. The estimated cost of the development is about $2.5 million. A builder buys Falls Lake land for custom homes. The Falls Lake area continues to attract custom builders who want to build multi-million dollar homes. Exeter Building Company acquired 22 acres along Falls Lake North off Highway 98 to build Maple Ridge Cove. It spent $2.31 million on the land, which is already entitled for 11 home sites. Ammons Development Group was the seller. Exeter is one of the home builders in the Grand Highland Estates community near Falls Lake, where homes range from $1.5 million to $3 million. It also has homes in Wexford Reserve and Wake Forest. Home sites at Maple Ridge Cove range from 0.92 acres to 1.55 acres. The property at 3820 Durham Road is assessed at more than $1.6 million. Garner Industrial Park fills up. A Southeast home builder is breaking into the Triangle with a new design center in Garner. Mitchell Homes is relocating from Rocky Mount to a flex space in the Greenfield Business Park near White Oak Crossing. The company will move into the 505 North Greenfield Parkway building in July on a 7-year lease. The move comes after Mitchell Homes president Scott Sleem started looking for locations to expand into the Triangle and found the business park developed by Mason Properties. Part of the draw was not only its location, but the expansive outdoor amenities like walking trails, courtyards with fountains, seating areas, and quarterly food truck events. Mason Properties President Greg Mason said Sleem approached him in June 2024 regarding leasing the remaining 4,500 square feet in the park. At the time, Mason Properties was working with another company on a deal for the space, but it was dragging its feet and nothing was signed. Scott came forward and said, "I want this space. I'll do whatever it takes." He signed the lease the next day, and they are doing all their funding. "The whole interior fit-up, which is absolutely amazing," Mason said. The Rocky Mount location is about 2,500 square feet. "This design studio is truly our most impressive yet," Sleem said in a release. Spanning 4,500 square feet, it provides a fully immersive experience where customers can see, touch, and interact with nearly every standard feature and luxury option we offer. The lease and move-in brings the Greenfield Business Park to 100% occupancy in its 4 buildings, totaling 100,000 square feet. Butterball's headquarters are in the park in a 30,000 square foot building. The 12-acre business park is part of the larger Greenfield North Industrial Park that includes Amazon's distribution center. A Vermont investor snags an apartment complexes. A Wake County apartment portfolio has changed hands to the tune of $40.5 million. California-based Magma Equities and Mile Rock Capital sold 3 apartment communities to the same buyer, Vermont's Sterling Legacy, which, according to Wake County deed records, bought the portfolio in 3 separate transactions. The properties are Maple Ridge in Holly Springs, Ridgewood in Wake Forest, and Park Place in Knightdale. Maple Ridge sold for $16.5 million. The 95-unit community is on 9.65 acres and has an assessed value of about $13.3 million. It was built in 1994. Ridgewood Apartments sold for $7.25 million and is assessed at nearly $8 million, renting between $1,278 and $1,522. The 50 units are spread among 10 buildings. Park Place Apartments, located near the Knightdale Crossing Shopping Center, sold for $16.75 million. Built in 1999, the community has 100 units in 20 two-story buildings. In Greater Triangle News, Ben Tobin's page has a number of articles. Chicago investors pay $9.5 million for retail center. NP Southern Pines Marketplace, an LLC that Secretary of State filings show shares an address with real estate investment firm North Pond Partners, spent $9.5 million to acquire the Southern Pines Marketplace Shopping Center on US 15501, according to Moore County deed records. The seller, Rockingham-based Tri-City Inc., purchased the shopping center in 2019 for $6 million. The property spans a little more than 8 acres. Tenants include Olive Garden, Dickie's Barbecue Pit, Sports Clips, and Ashley Furniture. Representatives of North Pond Partners did not respond to requests seeking comment about the purchase. Per the company's website, North Pond is focused on identifying underutilized retail and mixed-use assets in supply-constrained markets. Last year, North Pond acquired a shopping center in Pinehurst, and it was part of a partnership to redevelopment Gateway Plaza in Raleigh. Retail has been red hot in Southern Pines, mainly catalyzed by the nearly 100-acre Morganton Park South project. That project, led by Cincinnati-based Midland Atlantic Properties, brought the first Target and BJ's wholesale stores to Moore County. Other national chains, such as Whataburger, are set to make their Moore County debut in the near future. A Disney project officially begins. After nearly 18 months of anticipation, one of the most buzzworthy projects in North Carolina is underway. Story Living by Disney, the real estate arm of the Walt Disney Company, and its team began clearing the entrance road for its upcoming Asteria community in Chatham Park in May, according to Vanessa Jenkins, Executive Vice President of Preston Development, the Carey firm leading the 8,000-acre Chatham Park development in Pittsboro. Arizona-based DMB Development, Disney's development partner, has received a unanimous recommendation of approval from the Pittsboro Planning Board for its preliminary plat for the first phase of Asteria, which is slated to have 494 homes. The town's Board of Commissioners will vote on preliminary plat approval at its meeting in June, a critical step for the advancement of the project. Matthew Dean, a vice president with DMB Development and general manager for Asteria, declined to comment, saying the unanimous recommendation for approval is self-explanatory. He said the entrance road for the neighborhood is called Asteria Boulevard. Residents of Chatham County and across North Carolina have been clamoring for details on the Asteria project since Disney first announced it in December 2023. Home prices for Asteria are expected to start in the mid-six figures, with sales beginning in 2027. In all, Asteria, the second community from Story Living by Disney, with the first in Southern California, will span 1,500 acres and have more than 4,000 residential units, comprising a mix of multifamily and single-family homes, including age-restricted homes for residents 55 and older. LLCs tied to DMB Development and Disney purchased a combined 242 acres along the Haw River in March for more than $23.3 million. The land will be used for the first phase of the project, including 343 single-family homes. KB Homes opens 103-home subdivision. Los Angeles-based home builder KB Home has opened its newest community, Elise Meadows, in the Harnett County town of Lillington, off McDougal Road. The subdivision will include 103 homes, with prices starting at $290,000. We are pleased to offer home buyers in the Raleigh area new one- and two-story homes on large home sites in a serene location near local schools and outdoor recreation at Cape Fear River and Raven Rock State Park, Doug Schwartz, president of KB Homes Raleigh Division, said in a statement. Floor plans feature up to 4 bedrooms and 3.5 baths, while lots range from slightly below 0.6 acres to more than 2 acres. KB Home spent $4.5 million to acquire lots for the subdivision in February, according to county deed records. Lillington, with good proximity to Raleigh and relatively cheap home prices, the average home value was slightly below $283,000 in the municipality, according to the most recent estimates from Zillow, has become a very popular destination for home builders. Florida-based Dreamfighters Homes is planning a neighborhood called Magnolia Ridge off Micro Tower Road. A site plan for the neighborhood calls for about 80 single-family detached homes, starting at $265,500. The largest ongoing development in Lillington is Serenity by Raleigh-based developer Greenfield Communities. In all, the 550-acre community will have just under 1,200 homes. The town had under 5,000 residents based on 2023 estimates, but is growing. Over to Zach Azone's page on life sciences and higher ed for this edition of the Triangle Business Journal. UNC to spend $100 million on new student housing. UNC Chapel Hill is advancing plans to build its first new residence hall in decades as it aims to grow student enrollment in the coming years. The university's Board of Trustees, during a May meeting, approved a site for the future dormitory and a construction manager to oversee the project. UNC plans to develop the building on the northern part of its main campus near existing dorms, including Cobb and Stacy residence halls. The new building, expected to open by 2028, could include about 700 beds and cost around $108 million to $109 million, said Evan Yaski, university architect and executive director of facilities, planning, and design, during a board committee meeting on May 21st. He added that these are rough estimates as the project is in the early planning stages. To make space for the project, the board also approved the demolition of Jackson Hall on Country Club Road, which was built in 1942 and currently houses the university's undergraduate admissions office. The new residence hall is part of a larger plan to increase the university's supply of student housing and grow its undergraduate enrollment by 5,000 students over the next 10 years. UNC's undergraduate enrollment in fall 2024 was 20,885, according to UNC system data. Duke dumps firm that claimed $100 million in damages. On May 17th, Duke University sent a notice to Florida-based CryoCell International, terminating a license agreement and partnership related to cord blood and cord tissue developed at Duke, according to a public disclosure from CryoCell, which deals in stem cells. Duke claims that CryoCell breached the agreement. In October, CryoCell filed a demand for arbitration against Duke with the American Arbitration Association. CryoCell alleged that Duke fraudulently induced CryoCell to enter a license agreement that Duke then breached on various occasions, according to the company's latest financial filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. CryoCell says its plan to explore testing and administering treatments for patients with various conditions, including cerebral palsy and autism. The company set up physical operations in Durham by purchasing a facility in 2021. The FDA accepts firm's application to expand reach. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration accepted an application from BioCryst Pharmaceuticals to make the firm's lead product, Orladeyo, available to children as young as two. This comes as the company expects Orladeyo revenue to reach up to $600 million in 2025. The FDA first approved Orladeyo in late 2020 as a treatment for the prevention of hereditary angioedema, a rare disorder characterized by episodes of severe swelling, for patients 12 and older. BioCryst earlier this year submitted a new drug application to the FDA to expand Orladeyo's label to children between the ages of 2 and 11, which the FDA accepted in May. The FDA granted priority review of the application and is scheduled to make a decision on its approval by September 12th. Funding woes pause $228 million UNC facility. UNC Chapel Hill is pausing plans for a 174,000-square-foot, $228 million research building amid concerns over federal funding. The university had planned to begin construction this spring, with the building scheduled to be operational in 2028. Now it's uncertain when construction will begin. The seven-story building would add much-needed lab space on campus and could help attract additional talent to the university and increase its ability to conduct commercializable research. UNC's last major capital investment in lab space was a new genetic medicine building that opened in 2008. Federal agencies have recently terminated 104 grants to UNC, although the total dollar value is unclear. University spokesperson Kat Long said it is difficult to determine an exact figure as the canceled projects are in various stages of closing out activities. As of January, UNC expected the new research building to cost about $228.6 million, according to university documents. UNC planned to fund the project internally through its Facilities and Administrative Funds, or FNA, which are tied to sponsored research grants. Universities and other institutions receive FNA funds, also called indirect costs, through contracts and grants. The funding supports the maintenance and operations of buildings where research occurs and the administrative functions that support the research, like complying with federal regulations. The Trump administration earlier this year tried to put a 15% cap on the FNA rate on grants from federal agencies like the National Institutes of Health. This would be a dramatic drop from the 55.5% rate UNC previously negotiated with the federal agency. Grant funding from the NIH makes up a large share of UNC's total federal grant funding. A federal judge earlier this year temporarily blocked the policy from taking effect after numerous states sued the federal government. This edition's retail and restaurants include articles written by Kate Tracy. Restaurateurs team on new venue. A team of culinary experts in Raleigh is poised to bring new life to a space that's been a revolving door of restaurants in recent years. The restaurateurs Chidi Kumar and Paul Seiler of Aja, Angela Salamanca and Marshall Davis of the newly opened Malapata, and Justin Passfield of Local Seafood have leased 1000 Brookside Drive. The 3,500-square-foot space is located in the shops at Brookside near the Oakwood neighborhood. The group is excited to bring an as-yet-unnamed multi-concept operation that appeals to the family-centric neighborhoods the location will serve, Passfield said in an email. Renovation is in progress, and more details will be shared in the coming months. Kumar, a James Beard-nominated chef, owns Aja with her husband, Seiler. They also own the music venue King's and Neptune's Parlor. In 2022, Kumar closed her downtown restaurant, Garland. Salamanca and Davis recently opened Malapata in Raleigh's Gateway Plaza. Their other venues include Gallo Payon, now closed, Ex Voto, and Centro. Passfield is a partner in Local Seafood, Person Street Bar, and Natural Science. Plans for the new project are still in the early stages, and the venue does not have an opening date yet. Construction permits related to the project show CD Architecture and Deacon Built, both based in Raleigh, are the architect and general contractor, according to city records. The restaurant and retail space was most recently home to Atomi Comida y Cocteles, which operated from May to October of last year. Before that, Brookside Bodega, whose owners included Irregardless Cafe's owner Lee Robinson, operated there starting in 2022. Brookside Bodega added a retail section to the space after taking it over from the Mediterranean restaurant Falafel & Company, which opened in 2019. Dallas-based taco chain picks North Hills for the first Raleigh spot. Velvet Taco, a taco joint hailing from Dallas, has signed a lease at the CapTrust Tower at 4208 Six Forks Road. Highwoods Properties owns the CapTrust Tower. The space was formerly occupied by World of Beer. Velvet Taco will join Tiffa Chocolate and Gelato, a dessert franchise from California, as a tenant in the tower. North Hills will be Velvet Taco's third North Carolina location. The others are in Charlotte. The brand has restaurants in seven other states and announced a franchise expansion to London last year. Clay Dover, CEO of Velvet Taco, said in a release that the expansion to Raleigh is part of the company's nationwide growth, adding that North Hills embodies exactly what we seek, a dynamic community hungry for bold, global flavors. The restaurant's menu is eclectic, often mixing elements of different cuisines together. Examples include its spicy tikka chicken taco, fried paneer taco, or its chicken and waffle taco. A local franchisee signs second Raleigh lease. Kim Morris assigned a lease for her second location of Everbowl, a San Diego-based acai brand with 100 locations nationwide. The new Raleigh location in the Alexander Place Retail Center in Briar Creek is expected to open by the end of the year. The 1,200-square-foot space at 7850 Alexander Promenade Place was formerly a Supercuts. It's double the size of Everbowl's location off Falls of Neuse Road, which opened 2 years ago. The shop will include indoor and outdoor seating where customers can enjoy acai bowls, smoothies, toasts, and more. Morris thinks the demand for acai bowls is here to stay. Other acai bowl businesses popping up in the Triangle include Purple Spoon Acai, Bowie Bowls, and Palm Berries. Restaurant part of new RTP development. Stanchion Asset Partners, a real estate firm based in Charlotte, filed site plans in May with the City and County of Durham for a project called Davis Park East Retail, located at 610 Corbett Street in Research Triangle Park. The proposed uses for the project include future retail, restaurant, medical, and bank space. Site plans show three single-story buildings that are 3,501 square feet, 5,245 square feet, and 11,252 square feet. The largest building would have three suites, 4,045 square feet for a restaurant, 3,187 square feet for retail, and 4,020 square feet for a medical tenant. The 5,245 square foot building is designated for restaurant use. The smallest building, proposed as a bank, would come with two drive-through lanes. The 3.68-acre vacant parcel is owned by Alta Davis Park Owner, LLC, whose registered agent is Atlanta-based development firm Wood Partners. Wood Partners developed the adjacent Alta Davis apartment community, which broke ground in 2020. Stanchion hired Raleigh-based civil engineering firm McAdams and Charlotte-based FMK Architects for the project. Just east of the proposed retail site, the area is teeming with chain restaurants and local eateries, including Farmside Kitchen, Bojangles, Page Road Grill, Mez Contemporary Mexican, Randy's Pizza, and Carolina Glazed Donuts. Here's an era-ending article from this edition of the Triangle Business Journal. Clyde Cooper's sells downtown Raleigh spot. After 87 years in downtown Raleigh, a barbecue staple has sold its real estate. Clyde Cooper's Barbecue at 327 South Wilmington Street sold its property for $2.24 million. The buyers are Eric Zhang and his wife, Jinxia Dong. They own and operate Hibachi 88, a local Japanese restaurant with six locations in the Triangle. Clyde Cooper's will not be relocating immediately, as Zhang said the restaurant is leasing the building from him for the next 6 months. He's planning on remodeling the space and opening his seventh Hibachi 88 next April. Zhang said buying the Clyde Cooper's space was a good opportunity to open downtown. He liked the price for the space and the fact that downtown hosts a number of events to attract more customers to his restaurant. Debbie Holt bought Clyde Cooper's in 2008, 70 years after the restaurant opened. In 2023, Holt expressed her intention to relocate the restaurant out of downtown because she was dissatisfied with downtown's pandemic rebound. "I put a lot of thought into this, and I've defended downtown, and I never thought that I would feel this way in my heart. But I feel like it's time to move it," Holt said at the time. The new location for Clyde Cooper's has not been announced. Zhang opened his first Hibachi 88 in 2012 at 3416-100 Poole Road, east of downtown. Since then, he's opened two others in Raleigh, two in Cary, and one in Durham. Hibachi 88's entrees include hibachi chicken for $9.98, hibachi shrimp for $10.58, and hibachi steak for $10.98 on its website. Zhang purchased the Clyde Cooper space with a loan from North State Bank. The 4,200-square-foot restaurant listing hit the market last year for $2.874 million. Crash Gregg of Hodge & Cottrell Sotheby's International Realty was the listing agent. A brief correction. A story in the Triangle Business Journal on May 30th gave the incorrect name for a beer produced by Raleigh's Sneaky Penguin Brewing Company. The correct name is the Yellow Umbrella Hazy IPA. In today's edition of the Triangle Business Journal, there's a new investment article about building dating to 1916, now a boutique hotel in Wilson, by Ben Tobin. Cary and Holton Wilkerson are all in on downtown Wilson. 3 years ago, the couple moved from Raleigh to the eastern North Carolina city. Now the leaders of the Community Smith real estate firm are giving Wilson a hotel in its urban core. The Harris, located at 206 Tarborough Street, opened this spring. Holton Wilkerson described the space as offering a boutique collection of short-term rentals, with 9 units now available. Rooms, complete with a full kitchen, run $150 to $250 per night. We are community developers, so the easy button here would be to do apartments and then hire a property manager and just move on to the next, Cary Wilkerson said. But the impact of having out-of-town guests in the downtown is just undeniable. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Christy Walters, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.